To the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana vallabha girivar dhari गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्त वृंद श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्त वृंद जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare जय प्रभु पदा प्रभु पदा जय प्रभु पदा
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4 Chapter 27 Text 14 Gandharvyastadrushirasya Maithunyascha sita sitaha Parivritya vilumpanti Sarvakama vinirmitam Gandharvyastadrushirasya Maithunyascha sita sitaha Parivritya vilumpanti Sarvakama vinirmitam Gandharvyastadrushirasya Maithunyascha sita sitaha Parivritya vilumpanti Sarvakama vinirmitam
Ladies, please. Gandharvya, Gandharvis, Tadrushihi, similarly, Asya of Chandavega, Maithunya, companions for sexual intercourse. Cha, also. Sita, white. Asitaha, black. Parivritya, by surrounding. Vilumpanti, they plundered. Sarvakama, all kinds of desirable objects. Vinirmitam, manufactured. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Along with Chandavega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers. And all of them repetitively plundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. Purport. The days have been compared to the soldiers of Chandavega. Night is generally a time for sex enjoyment. Days are considered to be white and nights are considered to be black. Or, from another point of view, there are two kinds of nights, black nights and white nights. This is not the night like a chess night. This is night like night. All these days and nights combine to pass away our span of life and everything we manufacture for sense gratification. Material activity means manufacturing things for sense gratification. Scientists are conducting research to find out how we can satisfy our senses more and more elaborately. In this Kali Yuga, the demoniac mentality is employed in manufacturing various machines to facilitate the process of sense gratification. There are so many machines for ordinary household activities. There are machines for washing dishes, cleansing the floor, shaving, clipping hair. Today everything is done by machine. All these facilities for sense gratification are described in this verse as sarva kama vinirmitam. The time factor, however, is so strong that not only is our span of life being expended, but all the machines and facilities for sense gratification are deteriorating. Therefore, in this verse, the word vilumpanti, plundering, is used. Everything is being plundered from the very beginning of our lives. This plundering of our possessions and lifespan begins with the day of our birth. One day will come when death will finish everything, and the living entity will have to enter another body to begin another chapter of life and again begin the cycle of material sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj describes this process as puna punascharvita charvananam. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 30. Materialistic life means chewing the chewed again and again. The central point of material life is sense gratification. In different types of bodies, the living entity enjoys various senses, and through creating various types of facilities, he chews the chewed. Whether we squeeze sugar out of the sugar cane with our teeth or a machine, the result is the same, sugar cane juice. We may discover many ways to squeeze the juice out of the sugar cane, but the result is the same. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Turuvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Nice to see you. We haven't been in the same place together although we serve at the same temple. It's been months since I get to see Dhruv Prabhu and he gets to see me. So it's really nice. Today is also the appearance day of Sri Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is one of the important, in fact, one of the members of the Panchatattva. He stands to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's left because he is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's internal potency, or Srimati Radharani, Krishna's internal potency, the incarnation of Krishna's energy, and a very important personality in the Panchatattva. So if Krishna gives me the intelligence to combine discussion about Gadadhar Pandit in relation to this purport, it'd be wonderful. And we couldn't find the book, could we? Yeah. By Tirtha Maharaj. Yeah. We're entering a very important phase in this narration where we're discussing the appearance into the story of Chandavega. Literally, Chandavega means that which passes swiftly. And there is the time factor. Time factor, although, thank you very much, time, although each one of us measures time in the same way, time is a very relative energy. And although we calculate it as the passing of every second, and that every second accrues into a minute, each minute then accrues into hours and then to parts of days and weeks and months and years and lifespan, time energy works very differently depending on how it is utilized. But one of the features of time energy is to take away one's allotted arrangement for sense gratification. And so Chandavega has 360 soldiers, and they're going to attack. These are the days of the year, 360 days of the year that they will attack Puranjana. That is, each one of us is a living entity. And here, the Gandharvas, because time energy, Chandavega is the leader of the Gandharvas. Gandharvas are these mystical personalities. In this context, Gandharvas means those who are imperceptible, or cannot understand what is happening, because time is passing imperceptibly. And so the soldiers, the Gandharvas, have their female counterparts, the Gandharvis. And so there are 360 Gandharvis who are also going to attack Puranjana. That means the days and the nights. So the Gandharvis represent the nights. And Prabhupada describes, night is generally a time for sex enjoyment. Days are considered to be white and nights are considered to be black. Because during the day, the human being expends his life energy, his human capacity in working very hard. In trying to, here the word is vinirmitam, manufacturing different tools and facilities and arrangements for enjoying his senses. He works very hard. And all of this arrangement is that at night he can have sex and feel that he has accomplished a great thing for all the day's hard work. It's like the incentive. It's the incentive for being an ass during the day. Prabhupada explains that a man works very hard during the day, almost frothing in his mouth, and at night he comes anticipating sex. And sometimes the she-donkey kicks him hard in the face and he likes it and he comes back again and again. Because it's part of the courting, courtship. Oh, it's nice. And this is true across species. In every species, there is courtship for sex. Springtime means it's like the time for sex. Everything in nature is blooming and all the birds and animals are in heat, as they say. And they have their mating calls. Some animals have mating calls. Some birds have mating dances. Some male birds show off their, you know, really beautiful colors and sounds and noises and all this stuff just to attract the female. And the female just turns her head and says, oh, another male. So they have to fight for the female. Same thing happens in the human beings. It's done differently, but same thing. So like this, a person's day and night just goes away imperceptibly. They don't understand how time's passing away. So I heard a story from the Mahabharata, which is one of my favorite stories. So I like every opportunity to narrate it. So for those of you who already know it, too bad. For those of you who don't know it, too good. The story is, I'm going to cut right into, you know, the action part of it. One man finds himself in a dense forest. And as he is in this forest, he hears the rumbling of leaves behind him, like someone is behind him. He says, oh. And so he tries to walk swiftly. So the footsteps behind him also are at the same pace. He says, oh, and he runs. He runs swiftly, and someone who's chasing him is also running swiftly. He doesn't have the courage to turn back to see who it is, and he keeps running, and the pursuer also is chasing him. And while he's running, boom, he falls into a dark well, a blind well, as it's called. And the blind well is narrow, and he's just, you know, free fall right into the well, and he's groping in the darkness, trying to somehow stop from falling, and holds on to something. And then he sees up that there is this ferocious tiger gnawing at him, wants to eat him up. He says, I've somehow gotten rid of this problem. Maybe if I can walk down to the bottom of the well, I can sit for some time, the silly tiger will go away, and then I can get out. So he tries to somehow slowly get to the bottom of the well. You heard this? Okay. And then he hears a hissing sound. Psss. Says, what is there? Psss. Oh, there's a deadly snake at the bottom of the well. So now he cannot go down because the snake will bite him. He cannot go up because there's a hungry tiger. So he says, this is good enough. You know, hanging suspended like this from whatever, I think, vines or ropes that he found out in the dark, he said, it's not so bad after all. So when he's hanging out like that, he turns to try to figure out now, you know, his environment in this darkness. And as he squints, he sees two very tiny lights shining on this side and two very tiny lights shining on this side. So he pays close attention. He comes to know that there is a black mouse on this side gnawing at the rope. And he looks on this side, there's a white mouse gnawing at the rope. And now again he's anxious. What's going to happen? Very soon the mice will, you know, bite away the rope. I'm going to fall right to where the snake is and die. So in desperation he looks up, and right above the blind well is a tree, and there's a branch, and connected to the branch is a honeycomb. and a drop of honey falls, right? He doesn't know that there is a honeycomb. Something falls here. Now he's holding a rope in a dark well. How do you think he'll find out what that thing is? Licks it. So, because on video, I don't know. He extends his tongue out, somehow wants to reach, because he wants to know what it is. Gets a little lick, and it is the sweetest honey. Ah! In all of this desperation, some honey. Ah! And he forgets that the mice are gnawing at the rope. There's this deadly snake down there. There's a tiger, ferocious one, standing right there. He forgets that and opens his mouth, waiting for that next drop to fall. Once in a while, the drop falls on his tongue, and so he can relish the honey. Once a while, falls on his forehead, so he knows it's there, but he can't get it. So Mahabharata explains that every living entity in this world is exactly in this condition. The dark well is our life. We're in this material world, it's a dark well. We're holding on each side by ropes, which is our lifespan, that is being eaten away by the days and nights, represented by the white mouse and the black mouse. And they're slowly, slowly nibbling away at our life. The deadly snake at the bottom of the well is death, which, by the way, will happen. And the tiger, the ferocious tiger that's chasing us and we're trying to run away from, are all the problems of life. And this honey, the drop of honey that we might get once in a while, is some sense gratification. So that sense gratification comes at a very serious cost. Our life is being very quickly expended. But that little drop of honey for which we can even extend our tongue and lick it and say, I worked hard for it. I deserve it. This honey is so sweet, and that sweetness makes us completely forget the precarious condition that each one of us as a conditioned living entity is in this world. And the taste for sense gratification is so addictive that one will not give it up, even if it is at the cost of one's own life. Two examples. There was an experiment that was conducted by some psychologists. They had a little hamster in a box, and they made a little tiny hole in that box. So naturally the hamster would put his nose and mouth out to figure out what it is. So every time the hamster would poke his little snout out, they would give him a piece of cheese. So they conditioned the hamster into thinking that every time he puts his nose out, he gets a little piece of cheese. Then they made another hole. So naturally the hamster now says, hey, double the benefit. Whenever he put his nose out, they would give him a little tiny electric shock. Zzz. And so then they started at random giving either the piece of cheese or a little tiny electric shock from either of these little holes in the box. So once in a while, the hamster would get a piece of cheese. Once in a while, it would get a zap. So now this was a game. The hamster didn't know how to predict. And if he were, you know, an engineer, he would develop a model for predicting, you know, how often he would get the cheese, and try to minimize his risk of getting the zap. So after this random changes or random variability of, you know, zap and cheese, the psychologist, they opened the box completely from the back. They wanted to see what the hamster would do. You want to take a wild guess what the hamster did? He just stayed trying to figure out when he will get the cheese. When he had the whole back open for freedom, it didn't matter to him. It didn't matter to him that he would get a few zaps but it's worth it for the cheese. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srila Prabhupada's mercy in our lives has opened the door for freedom. But people are busy risking when they will get that piece of cheese, and hey, once in a while, zap, come on. What's the slogan? No pain, no gain. Huh? You don't have to have that pain, you can have full freedom. No, no, it's worth it, I'm working hard. Life means a few failures or some challenges. That's all right, but it's worth the cheese. Therefore, we become hamsters. It's worth it. Hey, that's what life is all about. Work hard. Do something. Oh, by the way, you know, human value means you might get a few zaps. Share the cheese with your wife. Come on. Or share the cheese with your neighbor and friends. Don't be so selfish. So suddenly human life becomes very glorious. It's still stupid. Because the real value of life is not even being pursued. So the other day, Gokulananda Prabhu was describing who's a Naradama. This is a Naradama. The doors open. This is a combination of Naradama and Muda. The zap is worth it. The doors open. But no. So this is the way a person's days and nights are very swiftly passing away. And so there are two types of nights, black nights and white nights. This is during the waxing and the waning of the moon. That's the way we understand. Another way of understanding, there are two nights. Then Prabhupada says, material activity means manufacturing things for sense gratification. That the study of anthropology, most anthropologists, what do? They dig different sites to look for tools that prehistoric man used. And they would say, look at this. This piece of stone was used for shearing. Shearing means cutting something. This was used for as an arrow or for piercing. So the prehistoric human being had good intelligence for hunting and gathering. And now the modern human being has very fancy gadgets for shearing, cutting, piercing. But the same thing is being done. So we look at, no, I don't say we, anthropologists look at the past, the prehistoric human behavior, to see how they manufactured different tools and how they organized themselves to gather, hunt, have sex, how they had their social orders established, etc. But the principle is whether prehistoric man, whether such a person actually existed or not, the Bhagavatam says that does not. Or modern, the whole idea is gadgetry. To create gadgets and tools for expanding the experience of sense gratification. Not only expanding, but also intensifying the experience of sense gratification. So the whole idea, I could take this in this direction, I won't. The whole idea of modern education is to give people the skills by which they can manufacture sense gratification faster, better, cheaper. This is our goal, our whole time, faster, better, cheaper. How soon can a person get to their sense gratification? How enhanced can it be? And at a lower cost. Somewhere behind the idea of all these tools and facilities is convenience, right? We want things to be convenient. That's why the washing machine was discovered, the blender, the VCR, all of these machines were discovered or invented to make it convenient. One of the reasons for convenience is to save time. The real million-dollar question is, what would one do with the extra time that they saved? So the promise of modern society is save time for sense gratification. Instead of doing the mundane, boring, repetitive work, let the machines do it. You use your time for sense gratification. Go out, enjoy, rather than wash clothes. Come on, washing clothes by hand takes a lot of time. Put it in the machine, and while it's moving in the machine, you watch TV or do something. So in a household, all the machines are on during the day. The blender's on, the washing machine's on, the microwave is on, the VCR is on, the TV is on. And for that, we need to rely so heavily on electricity. And to generate electricity, we have to do so many things. We have to have a nuclear reactor or a thermal power station or a hydroelectric power station, something. So what happens is, for the ultimate motivation of sense gratification, the entire human society is engaged by creation of jobs, projects, all of that. In the Vedic time, or the Vedic model of human civilization, because sense gratification is not the motivation, life was a lot simpler. You did not rely on electricity necessarily. Of course, I'm not saying that modern technology is only, you know, sinful and we have no benefit out of it. That's not true. Our friend Curtis here watches hours and hours of Srila Prabhupada's DVDs every day. Thanks to TV and VCR and DVD technology, he can do that. He was sharing the other day, whole day on his computer, Prabhupada videos are going on while he's working. When others come into his office or room, they're like, oh, who's this? And you know, some conversation. But for him, it's hours and hours. So there is benefit. Benefit when it is used for the ultimate purpose of life. Otherwise, we won't have to watch MTV or something. Headbangers Ball is what we used to watch at one time. I thought it was a great show. Anyway. So it's how something is utilized. So people utilize their time for purpose of upliftment. So everything that they did was not seen as a time waster. It was seen as a utilization of time in the grander scheme of things. Kept their bodies healthy, because they walked everywhere, they worked hard. The ladies did whatever they had to, they worked very hard, so they kept good health. So the complete opposite of this, let me finish this. So the whole idea of human society is then to redo again and again, try their best again and again to improve from the previous generation the facility for sense enjoyment. This is called chewing the chewed. It is for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And every generation of progress is to improve eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And we call that advancement. We call that civilization. I've said this in the past. Therefore, one time Gandhi was asked, when he came to England, he came in a little tiny dhoti and a shawl and with a stick. And everyone else was wearing these wonderful three-piece suit and tuxedos. He said, "Mr. Gandhi, what do you think about Western civilization?" He said, "That would be a very good idea." That the Westerners would become civilized. That's how he said it. It would be a very good idea. So civilization, being civilized, does not mean how fancy are my gadgets. Civilized means how much am I thinking about the higher dimensional realities? How much am I thinking about self-realization? In Bhagavad Gita, it's called Arya. Arya means civilized. When Arjuna was showing compassion towards his relatives, oh, I don't want to fight this ghastly war. And he gave five reasons, fantastic reasons, on the basis of ethical grounds, on the basis of moral principles, on the basis of just practical problems that will arise from all the men dying and just women who can be exploited and a bunch of unwanted population. He even said, I'll take the high road. I don't want to have sense gratification. He even experienced even a higher road than that. Let them have the kingdom. I don't care. I'll just go to the forest. Krishna told him, what an uncivilized idea. Anarjushtam. And because it is uncivilized, aswargyam, it's not uplifting. And by the way, it's akirtikaram. It is unmeritorious work. Your compassion is so silly that it won't bring any merit. Whew. Chastisement right in the beginning. So the idea of human civilization is, Prabhupada gave us, simple living and high thinking. But the modern paradigm has become simply living and hardly thinking. So simple living, Gadadhar Pandit exemplified that simple living. He was a friend of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from his childhood. And both were very, very dear friends. And Gadadhar Pandit was this steady, pakka brahmachari. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai Pandit in his childhood, was like this really mischievous kid. And he would constantly harass Gadadhar Pandit. But Gadadhar Pandit would always give him advice. Please, please, Nimai, why are you like this? You should study well. You should be like this. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just, you know, like the naughty kid. But they had a very, very close friendship. And Gadadhar Pandit resided in a place in Jagannath Puri. Actually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Jagannath Puri, he also came and stayed with him in Jagannath Puri. And he took what's called Kshetra Sannyas. Kshetra Sannyas means completely renounced but dedicated to that particular place. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived in Jagannath Puri for 24 years. So Gadadhar Pandit said, I will never move from Jagannath Puri. I will not move, yeah, from Jagannath Puri. And he stayed in the area of Jagannath Puri called Chatak Parvat. Chatak Parvat is nothing but like a sand dune. But it has significance because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Jagannath Puri, he saw this sand dune, and in his anticipation of seeing Vrindavan, he considered it to be Govardhan Hill. And so he ran with his arms. I don't know if you've ever seen the picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with arms extended, running towards the sand dune. That's the Chatak Parvat. And that Chatak Parvat, I mean, it really doesn't seem significant, but from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's view, that was Govardhan. Ah, I'm in Vrindavan. He saw the ocean and thought it was to be the Yamuna. And that Chatak Parvat is right outside the compound of the Tota Gopinath temple. The word Tota means garden. And that was the place where Gadadhar Pandit used to live. And he would recite the Srimad Bhagavatam every day. And he would recite it with such ardent feelings and getting into the mood of the Bhagavatam that he would be constantly crying. So one time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to hear, and he would go every day to hear from Gadadhar Pandit the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So one time when Gadadhar Pandit was narrating and he was in this deep mood narrating Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into this ecstatic phase, and his body was shivering and trembling and tears shooting out. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was scratching the floor with his nails. not like this floor, it's dirt floor. He was scratching it with his nails. And as the ecstatic experience became intensified, he started digging with his hands. And as he was digging, his hands felt something in the ground. And when they dug further, came out this beautiful deity of Gopinath. Manifested right there in that area. So he is called Tota Gopinath. The Gopinath was found in this garden. And there's this beautiful big deity of Krishna standing in threefold bending form. And Gadadhar Pandit dedicated his entire life to serving Tota Gopinath every day. Every day he would make this fresh flower garlands, walk up to the deity and dress the deity and put this beautiful garland around his neck. And he did that until he became a very elderly person. A time came in Gadadhar Pandit's life when, because of his age, his back was not straight anymore. It was stooped like this. So one day Gadadhar Pandit, in that stooped condition, brought this garland to put around Gopinath. But his back was so low that he couldn't reach Gopinath's neck. Because you have to go over the head, right? He couldn't. He tried, but he couldn't. And Gopinath sat down just for Gadadhar Pandit so he could garland him. So to this day, if you see Tota Gopinath, he's the only deity of Krishna who's sitting down. Although he was not found like that. The deity sat down just to allow Gadadhar Pandit to offer him this garland. That was the sweet relationship they had. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared from this world, Gadadhar Pandit was completely devastated. He was thinking of committing suicide, not like conditioned person, but it was this pangs of separation. Because Radharani's mood means this intense pangs of separation from Krishna. In that intensified mood, he had wanted to commit, end his life. What is the use of living without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I mean, if anyone of us felt like that, that would be good reason to give up life. But usually we don't feel like that. What is the use? What is the use? When he was thinking like that in his dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared and told him, don't leave yet. I want you to stay because in the future, a young man will come to you. His name will be Srinivas. And I want you to teach him the Srimad Bhagavatam. I want you to instruct him on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, my dear Lord. What does he do? Does he say yes or does he say no? You can't say no to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can't say yes because he cannot be with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it was this very difficult dilemma, very difficult instruction. Stay there, don't be with me. Stay there and wait for Srinivas to come. So he just waited for that day when Srinivas Acharya could come. He could instruct him in Bhagavatam and leave and be back with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Fast forward years later, I think almost about 100 years later, Srinivas Acharya was born. I mean, even how Srinivas Acharya was born is a fantastic pastime. But anyway, he was born. And then he had the instruction to go to Gadadhar Pandit to learn Srimad Bhagavatam. When he came to Gadadhar Pandit and said, please instruct me on Bhagavatam, Gadadhar Pandit took out his copy of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not like ours, printed on paper with ink and all that. It was just ink on palm leaves. The entire ink had been smudged from Gadadhar Pandit's tears. Because every time he would pick up the Bhagavatam to read it, he would be in this ecstatic realm. And with tears of separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his entire Srimad Bhagavatam got smudged. So it was unreadable, illegible. Said, I'm sorry, I can't teach you, I can't read anything. So at that time, there was only one other copy back in Navadvip. So Srinivas Acharya went walking all the way back to Navadvip to procure his copy of Bhagavatam to come back. So, I mean, in Srinivas Acharya's life, that's the lesson, that sincerity to study Bhagavatam was so intense that it didn't matter that you had to walk back to Navadvip, some 300 miles, whatever, and walk back with another copy. It was not like call the BBT, go to the gift store and just, you know, swipe your card and voila, you got the Bhagavatam. It's Prabhupada's mercy is the Bhagavatam is so accessible. In that case, it was not. But by the time Srinivas Acharya brought the copy of Bhagavatam, Gadadhar Pandit had left his body. Of course, Srinivas Acharya's whole story is like that. He has to go to the next person, they have left their body, he has to find somewhere else, they have left their body, he has to go to meet Rupa Sanatan, they have left their body, and it's just really amazing, his sense of separation. So Gadadhar Pandit is a very important personality. Anyway, who am I to say? But so we'll read a few things from his life to receive his mercy, because by the mercy of Sri Gadadhar Pandit, we can receive the mercy of Sri Sri Gauranithai, Sri Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. I'm going to read a few things. This is from Gaura Ganodesha Deepika. Gaura Ganodesha Deepika is a book that indicates who's who in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes from Krishna's pastimes. Like, see, Krishna is now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Balaram is Lord Nityananda, like that. Radharani is Gadadhar Pandit. So this book indicates who's who from Krishna's pastime. The incarnation of love, who was previously the queen of Vrindavan, Radha, is now the beloved of Gaura, named Srila Gadadhar Pandit. Swarup Damodar himself indicated that Gadadhar was Vraja's goddess of fortune, the Lakshmi who was previously the beloved of Shyamasundar in Vrindavan. She has today become the goddess of fortune and love for Gaura and is known as Srila Gadadhar Pandit. Lalita, who is also known as Anuradha, is Radha's closest friend and confidant. She has also entered into Gadadhar, as was shown in the play Chaitanya Chandrodaya. This is from Gaura Ganadesha Deepika. Then from Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita. Quote, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears in six features. We usually say Panchatattva as five features. Bhaktisiddhanta's writing is six features. Namely, as the two types of guru, the devotee of the Lord himself, his incarnation, his expansion, and his energy. According to the principle of simultaneous oneness and difference, they are all identified with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Another quote, she who was Radha in Krishna's pastimes became Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami in Gaura Leela. When Gaura manifests his identity with Narayan, his Shaktis are his wives Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya. When identifying with Krishna, his Shakti is Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. We know this verse, Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam. I offer my obeisances to Krishna, who appears in five features as a devotee, as the expansion of a devotee, as an incarnation of the devotee, as the pure devotee, and as the devotional energy. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Thakur comments on the words of the life of Gadadhar as follows. Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami is chief amongst the most intimate devotees of Sri Chaitanya. He is the fountainhead of the entire Shakti Tattva and is thus present equally in Mahaprabhu's Leelas in Navadvip and Nilachala. Nilachala means Jagannath Puri. His childhood home was in Navadvip. Later, when he took sannyas, he went to live in Jagannath Puri in the garden or thota by the seashore. Pure devotees who wish to enter into the worship of Radha and Govinda in the Madhura Rasa take shelter of Gadadhar Pandit and are known as Gauranga Mahaprabhu's intimate devotees. Those devotees who are not so inclined to take shelter of Nityananda Prabhu and engage in pure devotional service according to his mode. Some of Mahaprabhu's devotees, such as Narahari, were followers of Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. They took refuge in him because they knew him to be Mahaprabhu's dearest associate and thus worthy of their service. Some devotees therefore called Chaitanya the life of Nityananda, while others call him the life of Gadadhar. Gadadhar's early life. Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was born in the village of Beleti in the Chittagong district of modern Bangladesh in 1408 or about 1486 AD on the dark moon day of the month of Vaishakha. Today is that day. Because Kishore, you're wearing black dress, so we know it's a new moon day. His father was Madhava Mishra, a Varendra Brahmana in the Kashyapa Gotra, and his mother Ratnavati Devi. He also had a younger brother named Baninath. The family remained in Beleti Gram until Gadadhar was 12 and then moved to Navadvip. Gadadhar Pandit was a brahmachari for his entire life. Indeed, his indifference to the pleasures of the world was such that Ishwara Puripad was very impressed when he visited Navadvip. Ishwarapuri gave Gadadhar instruction in a book he had himself written called Krishna Leelamrita. While Mahaprabhu was delighting in his pastimes as a student, there was no scholar in the entire town of Navadvip who was unafraid of entering into debate with him. Mahaprabhu would defeat one's position and then show how the same position could be defended. Mukunda, Srivas, and others who knew the joys of devotional sentiment were afraid of getting involved in such useless debates with Nimai Pandit, so they would avoid him. One day, Nimai Pandit saw Gadadhar and asked him to give the definition of liberation. Gadadhar answered according to the Nyaya philosophy that liberation consisted in the final and absolute eradication of all miseries. Atyantika Dukkha Nivritti. Nimai then proceeded to show how this definition was inadequate. He liked to debate with everybody. The other devotees listening to him speak thought how wonderful it would be if such a brilliant scholar only became a devotee. When Mahaprabhu returned from Gaya, he began to reveal the amazing transformations of divine love. Sriman Pandit was the first to see Mahaprabhu's ecstatic symptoms, and he reported what he had seen to all the other devotees, who were overjoyed with the news. When Mahaprabhu decided to reveal his true identity to the devotees, he told them to come to the house of Shuklambar Brahmachari. Gadadhar was amongst those who were present there, but remained discreet about his presence until he saw Mahaprabhu became intoxicated with the power of the holy names. Gadadhar himself was overcome with ecstatic emotions known as sattvikas and fainted. Mahaprabhu then said to him, Gadadhar, you have such good fortune. From your early childhood, your mind has been fixed on Krishna's lotus feet, while I have been wasting my life in useless activities. Despite obtaining the great treasure of a human birth, by my misfortune, I was able to make no use of it. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. Subsequently, Gadadhar would calm Mahaprabhu whenever he was overly affected by his ecstasies. One day, Mahaprabhu was crying out in separation, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" Gadadhar said to him, "Your Lord Krishna is hidden in your heart." As soon as he heard this, Mahaprabhu began to claw at his chest, but luckily, Gadadhar was able to stop him by holding his hands. He then pacified him by saying, "Krishna will come to you shortly. Be patient." When Sachi saw how clever Gadadhar was in handling her son, she asked him to always stay near Nimai to protect him. So that's how they were always together. You know the story of Gadadhar Pandit taking initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi? One day, Mukunda took Gadadhar Pandit, this really strong brahmachari, to meet with Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was an aristocrat. He lived in a palace, had fantastic furniture in his house, many servants who would carry many different drinks for Pundarik Vidyanidhi to drink. And he wore very fancy silken garments, perfumed his body and hair. And Gadadhar Pandit was a brahmachari who lived in one simple torn cloth. Okay. So when Mukunda brought him, and he saw the aristocracy in which Pundarik Vidyanidhi was living, he thought, who is this sense gratifier? Oh, get me out of here. And because he was feeling like that, Mukunda recognized. And so he burst into this recitation of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. And as soon as he burst into these verses, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, his real identity, came out as a devotee. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi went into ecstasy. He rolled on his bed, tore his clothes off, and his hair was all disheveled, and just was rolling on the ground, just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And Gadadhar Pandit was shocked. Wow! It's just the externalities, but inside is this gem of a devotee. And he said, I've committed a very serious offense by judging this great personality's on the basis of his appearance. How can I atone for this? So he fell at Pundarika Vidyanidhi's feet and said, please accept me as your disciple. So for the rest of my life, I will serve you. So that's, I've shortened the story, it's a longer story. But that's how Pundarika Vidyanidhi initiated Gadadhar Pandit. And Pundarika Vidyanidhi's actual identity in Krishna's Leela is that he is Vrishabhanu Maharaj. Vrishabhanu Maharaj is Radharani's father. So there is an intimate ontological connection between the two. So there are all these wonderful pastimes. Sri Gadadhar Pandit Goswami disappeared at Puri on the dark moon day of Jyeshta in 1456 or 1535. So there's a little short another biography of his taking Kshetra Sannyas. We'll end with this. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving Jagannath Puri to go to Vrindavan, to go to South India, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of the 24 years, went to South India for almost 4 years. So as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving, whole set of devotees walked along with him to leave Jagannath Puri, and he said, no, stay. No, wherever you go, we'll go with you. And Gadadhar Pandit also followed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for hours on end outside of Jagannath Puri. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, stop, you've taken a vow of Kshetra Sannyas, that you will never leave Jagannath Puri. So don't break this vow. He said, what's the use of this vow if I can't be with you? To hell with this vow. If it means I have to go to hell, fine. I want to be with you. You are my Lord and Master. I don't care for all these vows. I want to be with you. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you cannot break this vow. You have to be here. Again, another dilemma, how to do this? Cannot live without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, cannot break a vow, especially when he's saying, don't break the vow. So he went into this whole realm of transcendental separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, eagerly waiting for the day when he would return. And he didn't return till 4 years. He went on the pretext to finding his older brother, Vishwaroop. It was just to travel around South India. So that was the intimacy of relationship between Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We worship Gaur Nithai. In the Gaudiya Math, they also worship Gaur Gadadhar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandit. Both are fine. So, I don't think we have time for questions because we have gone way beyond our time. But thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.